Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald on Fubar Radio.
Hello, you're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Zoe Grunewald. Coming up on today's show, Donald Trump has announced sweeping tariffs on some of its largest trading partners, upending decades of US trade policy and threatening to unleash a global trade war on what he has called Liberation Day. Well, we'll be speaking to an economist about the impact of this on the UK and beyond. Plus, former Love Island contestant Ollie Williams has announced he will be running for Reform in the local elections this May. We'll be speaking to a young candidate about what exactly is making Reform so enticing to young people, in particular young men, on today of all days, Nigel Farage's birthday. As always, you can find us at Politics Uncensored UK on social media. All that and more coming up later in the programme. But first, it's the week unwrapped.
Illegal migration is a massive driver of global insecurity. It undermines our ability to control who comes here. And that makes people angry. It makes me angry, frankly, because it's unfair on ordinary working people who pay the price, from the cost of hotels to our public services struggling under the strain. And it's unfair on the illegal migrants themselves, because these are vulnerable people being ruthlessly exploited by vile gangs. So look, we must each take decisive action in our own countries to deal with this. Nobody can doubt that the people we serve want this issue sorted.
This week, Sir Keir Starmer hosted the first ever organised Immigration Crime Summit, which was attended by over 40 countries alongside tech giants like Meta and TikTok. In his speech, the Prime Minister claimed poor organisation had meant the UK was a soft touch on illegal migration, which smugglers have taken as an open invitation. Sir Keir highlighted this government's efforts, saying they had returned 24,000 people who had no right to be here, which was the highest return rate for 8 years. However, more than 6,000 people have crossed the channel so far in 2025, making it a record start to a year for small boat arrivals. Well, joining me now to discuss all this and more is Josiah Mortimer, chief reporter at Byline Times. Josiah, Starmer is obviously taking a very hardline approach to illegal immigration. Do you think this is going to help?
I think you're right. He's going very big at the moment on illegal migration. And I think, we're coming up to a big raft of local elections over in May. So the timing, perhaps just as Labour launches its local election campaign, maybe isn't so coincidental. Whether it will get the numbers down, I mean, it's very difficult to say. It feels like over the past 14 years, there's been hundreds of announcements like this on clamping down on small boat crossings and illegal migration, and all of them kind of ignore, I think, what is the elephant in the room, which is that, you know, if you don't offer safe and legal routes for asylum seekers to apply for asylum in the UK, then people are going to make these really treacherous journeys. And, you know, you can make it very hard for them to do that. But, you know, people are really determined to bring their families over here when they're fleeing hardship and, you know, in search of a better life. So it's a very tricky sort of square to circle, as it were. Now, as you say, the government does say that it's made some progress on this, but I mean, the numbers are still pretty high. Then on the other hand, you know, these overall numbers, 6,000 small boat arrivals in the year so far, I mean, these are a tiny fraction of the total immigration numbers. I mean, we had nearly 1 million come over to the UK last year. And of course, even among illegal migrants, or illegal migration, it's a tiny fraction of that as well. Most illegal migration is actually people overstaying their visas. So it is making a very big thing of what has been a really contested political issue. And, you know, it will take time for the government to sort, and whether it's in their interest to draw so much attention to it right now, I think remains to be seen.
One of the things that the government has pointed to is fragmented policing, border force and intelligence agencies, which Sir Keir Starmer said had basically meant the UK was a soft touch on illegal migration. So it wasn't joined up enough with both domestic and foreign agencies. And therefore, people smugglers have been able to kind of take advantage of this particular framework and get people in. And you talked about saving legal routes as being the kind of elephant in the room, but arguably another elephant in the room is potentially our relationship with the EU and whether we are able to form any kind of returns agreements with those states. I mean, do you see this as a possibility, and how important are returns agreements with Europe in our approach to illegal migration?
Yeah, I mean, it's no surprise that the sort of numbers of these crossings absolutely jumped up massively after Brexit. It has been harder to return people to the continent, across the Channel to France, just because, our relationships have really fractured since Brexit. There is work, it seems, being done to repair those relationships, but it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of work. It's, as I say, not something that can be done in a heartbeat. The cynic or perhaps the optimist thinks that, maybe this is a way to that the government sees to, bring relationships, sort of restore those relationships that have been shattered since Brexit and actually, cooperate much more closely with Europe. Obviously, the government wants a reset with our European allies. They do want a closer relationship than certainly the Conservatives went for while they were in office. And security and defence, and protecting the borders does seem like a fairly, let's say, voter-friendly option for doing it.
The Prime Minister said he was angry at the scale of illegal migration, and he's talking in terms that, in the sort of language that it's not dissimilar to see on, right-wing news sites like GB News or to hear from right-wing parties. He's talking about it being unfair on ordinary working people who pay the price. He's talking about the cost of hotels, public services struggling under the strain. But obviously, we know that this government is going to continue having to fund hotels for asylum seekers for quite a long time. We know that they are still going to have to take a share of refugees. Is he setting himself up for failure here by kind of raising the salience of this issue, but actually knowing that there is a court backlog? We know that there are more crossings happening. We know that the government isn't set up to deal with this, and we know that our relationships with the EU are fractured. They aren't going to solve the small boats crisis, are they? And by using this kind of language, is he not setting Labour up for more angry voters who see migration as the font of all UK's problems?
Yeah, that's absolutely a risk. And actually, it's one that costs the Conservatives dear, because they talked up illegal migration for so many years. And of course, it absolutely soared on their watch, despite passing legislation and attempting to get these this Rwanda-style deportation deal sorted. Obviously, by the end of that, we had absolutely nothing to show for it. Something like 700 million of public funds spent on this Rwanda deportation agreement that only saw something like 3 volunteers actually take it up. So, in the end, we were looking at something like 200, 250 million per volunteer, let alone people forcibly deported under this scheme. So, weaponized hostility to these crossings, I think really could cost Labour dear if they can't actually tackle the root of the problem, and they're reluctant to deal with the roots of the problem in terms of reducing the actual need for people to feel that they need to make these dangerous crossings in the first place. If you don't allow people to apply for asylum on the continent itself, then people are, as I say, going to keep trying to make these dangerous journeys. And you can tinker around the edges, sort of clamping down on social media advertisements of, people smugglers trying to solicit vulnerable people to make these crossings. But it really does seem like it's sort of playing around with the margins. And of course, this is a really big issue, not for all voters, but certainly for reform voters. Keir Starmer knows that. do they really believe that he is actually truly angry about this problem, that he does see it as a priority? I'm not sure they do. I'm not sure they will. And, you know, perhaps they'll just see Labour as a sort of reform light that isn't getting the job done. And they think, well, we'll just try the real thing.
Absolutely. OK, let's move on to our next story. So only 21% of adults in Britain are currently satisfied with the NHS. This is a record low, with nearly 60% reporting they are dissatisfied with the service. Well, satisfaction has fallen dramatically from the 70% recorded in 2010. The year before the last Labour government left office, and the 60% found in 2019, the year before the COVID pandemic. A&E saw the biggest discontent, with 19% of adults saying they were satisfied, down from 31% in 2023. Lewis Ansari of the patient watchdog Health Watch England said the survey was a sobering reminder of the state of the NHS. Josiah, it feels as if the NHS is simply beyond repair at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's bleak, isn't it? It does feel like things are pretty low. But then it's difficult to say. I mean, you know, one really important thing to note about this study is the British Social Attitudes survey, I think, that came out this week, is that the data is actually kind of a little bit old. Obviously, we're only getting it now, but it's a big survey that was conducted between September and November last year. Of course, government didn't have much time after July to sort of sort out what were really long-standing problems of massive waiting list backlog and these super, you know, really low patient satisfaction levels. So there has been a bit of time that's passed since. I mean, you know, the government for its part would say that they have started to reduce that treatment backlog waiting list down by nearly 200,000 now. But of course, that's from, you know, a very high baseline. You know, another thing to note as well, this was after you know, particularly rocky time of industrial action, and that really did push up waiting lists, and it did lead to a general sense of malaise, really, that the health service wasn't working and that it was kind of on its knees. I think now, with that industrial action, touch wood, for the time being, looking like it's been sorted, numbers are slowly starting to come down. Perhaps those satisfaction figures will tick back up, but it does feel like there is something kind of deep-seated, that people feel like the NHS isn't working for them. You know, in the budget last autumn, there was a really big injection of cash put in the health service in England, and of course that will take a while before it starts leading to outcomes for patients. So I think the government would hope that it's got a little bit of time on its side, you know, a bit of time before the next general election for these numbers to turn around. But for the time being, it does feel, yeah, pretty hairy.
And do you think, I mean, just quickly before we move on to the next topic, do you think that Wes Streeting, you know, he obviously is responsible for disbanding NHS England. He's spoken a lot about reforming the NHS. If you talk to kind of doctors and health think tanks, they seem pretty encouraged by some of the language he's using, and they seem pretty encouraged by his ambition. But then there's a lot of nervousness about private investment, about the role of, you know, this conversation about reform over funding. And you talked about that injection of cash, but I think there is a nervousness about creeping privatisation in the health service. Are we right to feel that the NHS is safer in Labour hands than it would be, for example, in the Conservatives, who were a lot friendlier to privatisation?
I think there's a probably baseline level of trust among people who work in the health service, you know, under a Labour government, that they, you know, they won't sell the family silver and they won't flog off the NHS. I certainly don't think we're heading in that direction, but of course there will be understandable nervousness at talk of reform involving, you know, many more elements of private providers sort of coming in to fill some of these gaps. That you know, that has been a worry for decades. I think one thing that sort of alleviates some of that is the fact that the controversial Andrew Lansley reforms, those reforms under the coalition government, which, you know, did bring in a lot more sort of private elements, you know, the role of private healthcare providers was increased in the NHS. Those are being reversed. And, kind you know, through the NHS England being abolished, there is actually going to be probably more government, you know, sort of Whitehall control than there has been for a long time. So Yeah, I do think we're in a kind of wait and see scenario at the moment. But yeah, I do think overall there is a bit more trust among healthcare professionals than there was, you know, just looking at the facts, at the stats of how the NHS was operating at the end of the last government. Yeah, no one could say that morale among NHS professionals was particularly high.
Mm, absolutely. Okay, moving on to our final story. So the Liberal Democrats are urging Britons to buy UK-made products to support businesses hit by Trump's latest round of global tariffs. The party is calling on the government to launch an advertising blitz to send a collective message that the UK won't take Trump's tariffs lying down. Around 60 billion in British exports are set to be hit under a 10% baseline tariff on all foreign imports announced by the US president on Wednesday, on top of the already announced taxes on aluminium, steel and cars. Josiah, you've written about this for Byline Times, the publication where you work, about Britain potentially being inspired to boycott by Canada. Do you think we're likely to see consumers turn their back on the US?
I think it might already, you know, be starting to happen. Certainly, you know, when I posted about this a couple of days ago, you know, the suggestion that the UK could kind of follow Canada in, you know, when Donald Trump threatened tariffs on Canada, there was this massive popular, you know, kind of patriotic response from the public there. And, you know, they were turning upside down US products in supermarkets. Supermarkets themselves were labeling products that came from the US saying, you know, this is tariff impacted. And sales of US products, you know, they collapsed almost overnight. And I think something like there's been a 70% drop in Canadian tourists visiting the US. So that, you know, it has been a very powerful backlash there. You know, whether there is the appetite for that here in the UK, obviously our trade is much lower than Canada, with the US than over there. But I do think there's a real, you know, Donald Trump and Elon Musk are really not popular in the UK. And I think if, you know, Keir Starmer's government acts very slowly in responding to Trump's tariffs, then, you know, we could end up seeing this sort of guerrilla action among consumers and, you know, them using the power of their pocket and turning away from US products. Let's see what happens. But I think this call from the Lib Dems is very interesting. And, you know, perhaps other parties will, you know, listen up and follow suit.
So talk to me about what this would mean in practice. So, you know, I definitely more of a Scotch whiskey drinker than bourbon. I think it's gross. But what else are we talking about? I mean, what sort of products might we boycott? What could I do tomorrow, for example? What switches could I make?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think a lot of the discussion about the tariffs has been about all of the sort of industrial machinery that, you know, both countries export to each other. But of course, there's a lot of US brands that do operate in the UK. Am I allowed to mention a list of controversial brands?
I don't see why not. I mean, Go for it.
There's all your well-known ones, your Coca-Cola's, Pepsi's, McDonald's, Nike. I think one of the areas that's really difficult for consumers to boycott is these tech giants, you know, your Apple, Amazon, you know, Netflix, Meta, even your companies like PayPal and Uber. They are, you know, it's harder to find alternatives to them. But people have been sharing with me, you know, lists of European alternatives to some of these tech giants. And I have seen, you know, just anecdotally, some UK and European countries sort of turning away from those, you know, to European companies instead. I think on the consumer end, you know, there's also, I think one of the difficult things as well is that a lot of the brands that we think of as being quite quintessentially British, you know, Cadbury's, Heinz, you know, Boots on the high street as well, they are actually owned by US companies now. For Boots, it's Walgreens, Cadbury's is owned by Mondelez, Heinz is owned by Kraft. So that does make that consumer boycott sort of action a little bit harder. But people are starting to share lists now of, you know, some of the alternatives. And I think if that picks up a bit of traction, it could certainly cause a bit of a stir.
Okie doke. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. I do feel like anger is absolutely culminating around these tariffs. And I think Brits are starting to feel like they might want to take some action. So we'll see. Maybe a boycott of American goods is in the pipeline. Josiah, thank you so much for joining me. That was great. Josiah is the chief reporter at Byline Times. Coming up, as we've just been discussing, Donald Trump has revealed his package of global tariffs, including a 10% tariff on all imports from the UK. Have we escaped lightly, or is there worse to come? Well, we'll be speaking to an economist about what all of this means and how it will affect everyday spending and, of course, our own pockets. We'll discuss that next on Politics Uncensored.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald on Fubar Radio.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brook.
Moira Higgins,
that was a Geordie Shaw thing,
has scrubbed a shitty toilet with her ex-boyfriend's toothbrush. Why did she do this?
He's obviously done something very bad.
Do we know who he is? Does anybody know who he is?
No, but I mean, I don't think he'd want to know who he is.
No.
I think he'd probably go and hide in now, whoever that is.
Mate, if you're listening to this, go and buy a new toothbrush because you've still got the same one.
Get yourself to Turkey and get yourself some veneers because I can't imagine them teeth are going to last much longer.
No.
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Fubar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for Fubar Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The Fubar Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
Is the sound of your mates alive? Is getting to more gigs this year and the next? Is the sound of saying, I got you, mate? Is the sound of mates enjoying even more of this? Is the sound of mates getting home instead of here? Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on Fubar Radio.
Danny Harmer, hello.
Thank you, what an introduction.
I heard in an interview, this may no longer be the case, but in 2020 you said you'd never actually read the original Tracy Beaker.
I've still never read it, and I'm gonna go down with this ship, and quite frankly, I shall never read it. I've got this far in life. And do you know what? I think it's kind of, in a weird way, I think it helped me get the part, because I had no idea of this character apart from the character that I made her.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on Fubar Radio.
You might then see friends, family that require a little bit of support, financial advice. How do you go about sharing that advice, sharing that support without being condescending?
A practical tip that everyone can do that is low friction: send them financial content that you like. If you have a favorite content creator, if you see an article that you like, send them the video and just ask them, what do you think? And then that can begin a conversation around it.
Politics Uncensored UK for more from the show.
You're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Zoe Grunewald. Well, it was Liberation Day yesterday, according to Donald Trump.
In a few moments, I will sign a historic executive order instituting reciprocal tariffs on countries throughout the world. Reciprocal. That means they do it to us and we do it to them. Very simple. Can't get any simpler than that. This is one of the most important days, in my opinion, in American history. It's our declaration of economic independence. For years, hardworking American citizens were forced to sit on the sidelines as other nations got rich and powerful, much of it at our expense. But now it's our turn to prosper, and in so doing, use trillions and trillions of dollars to reduce our taxes and pay down our national debt, and it'll all happen very quickly. With today's action, we are finally going to be able to make America great again, greater than ever before.
Well, just when you thought it was a good idea to engage with the news again, President Trump has unveiled sweeping global tariffs that will ignite an unprecedented global trade war. His list includes 10% tariffs on goods entering the US from the UK in response to the UK's 20% VAT. He's also confirmed the European Union will face a 20% tariff on all other imports, while China's rate is set at 34%. His first tariff announcement, a 25% duty on all car imports, came into play at 5 a.m. this morning. Sir Keir Starmer responded by saying nothing is off the table as the UK released a list of US products it could hit with tariffs, including firearms, mattresses and fish waste. The announcement also sent the stock markets tumbling, with the UK's FTSE 100 share index falling 1.5%, while Wall Street has opened sharply lower. So how economically damaging are these tariffs, and what do they mean for us? Joining us now is Fergus Jimenez England, Associate Economist at the National Institute of Economic and Social Research. Fergus, thank you so much for joining us. Tell me, what is your read on this? How concerned should we be as consumers on Trump's tariffs?
Well, in short, I think people should be pretty concerned. I mean, the tariffs are really wide sweeping, and they will definitely have a huge impact on the global economy. And unfortunately, the UK is a small open economy. Any kind of trade disruption on the scale is going to jeopardise our economy, and importantly, the people in it.
The Brexiteers have already rubbing their hands this morning, because they seem to have found a small glimmer of relief, which is that we have apparently escaped with a lower tariff than we possibly anticipated at 10%, whereas Europe, the EU, is facing tariffs of 20%. Are the Brexiteers right? Is this a clear example of why it's beneficial to be outside the EU?
Okay, well, there are two parts to that, which is the first question is it preferential to have, you know, 10% tariffs over 20%? Mm-hmm. Yes, insofar as it means the damage could clearly have been larger in a direct sense. But also fundamentally, no, in the sense that, you know, we are a huge trading partner with the EU. Any tariffs on the EU, as we're part of a lot of their supply chains, will ultimately transmit to higher prices through us indirectly. And then more broadly on the Brexit front, a lot of analysis has been done at NISA by my colleagues that has shown that Brexit has so far damaged the economy due to reduced trade, foreign direct investment and productivity, driven by things like non-tariff barriers and border controls. And so if you were to take it in that way, I can anticipate Brexit even potentially being more permanent than these tariffs, which have the potential to only last Trump's presidency. So in that sense, I wouldn't consider it a victory, no, just maybe less of a loss.
very interesting. And so tell me about what this means for us as consumers. How are we going to feel in our pockets, in our day-to-day life, the impact of these tariffs? And is there a chance that, I know it seems to me, and you can correct me on this if I'm wrong, but sometimes it feels as if any opportunity that retailers get to put up their prices in the face of global uncertainty, they will take, whether that is to cover their risks up front or whether that is to take advantage of an unstable market. Are we going to feel the result of this quite quickly in rising prices across the board, or is that a bit alarmist?
It's difficult to say. I think I can't particularly speak to the incentives of retailers. I think, you know, fundamentally, businesses don't want to go out of business, and they will raise their prices accordingly. And the corresponding profit margins, they vary by industry to industry. So I can't put an incentive on that. What we do know is that, you know, these tariffs will transmit to the UK through higher prices. Of course, it should be said very clearly up front that US consumers and businesses will be the ones footing the bill for the tariffs themselves. A lot of the indirect effects to the UK's prices will be coming through exchange rate effects. So our imports will become more expensive from the US, which is it's a non-trivial trade partner. It takes up about 10% of our imports. So that's the first thing. And then the price rises themselves. In the UK, we've run some initial analysis. Inflation is likely to rise by about 2 percentage points in the short run. Given that inflation is already pretty high, We would also maybe be looking at higher interest rates for longer. So you'll be seeing prices rise, but also mortgages harder to finance, unfortunately.
Mm. So more economic pain for people, and that is definitely going to affect Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor's ambition for growth, correct? So what is it that the UK government could do? I mean, there is a chance they are hoping that they can negotiate these tariffs down. But is there more we can do? I mean, should we be thinking about forming new alliances, maybe a new trading bloc with other countries, for example? Should we be thinking about rejoining the EU, the customs union? I mean, what are the options on the table available to us, and which would minimise the damage of a Trump presidency and the resulting tariffs?
Well, you know, if we're talking about tariffs and assuming for now that they only last the length of the presidency, things like rejoining the EU, you know, good or not, would be a particularly difficult task for the Labour government to pull off. Mm. I think our best options, and this is much, much easier said than done. The first is, I think, potentially off the cards for now, although you never know with Donald Trump, is that we could try to form a trade deal with the US. Obviously, with a 10% tariff as a lower bound, I think it would be very difficult for the UK to make a case as to why they're worth being excluded from this lower bound. And then the other option, perhaps not in favour of the Brexiteers, is to simply get closer to the EU. Mm. You know, I'm not a political scientist, so I don't know what kind of dynamics are at play when the UK has a 10% lower tariff than the EU when it comes to these kind of negotiations. But I think at a time when trade fragmentation is really going to hurt a lot of economies, and very importantly, the people that make up these economies, getting closer to trade partners is probably a step in the right direction.
Mm. And let's talk a bit about what this actually means for Americans, because as you said, I believe in your intro question, this is actually going to, it's Americans and American firms that are probably going to feel the most pain from this. So what is the logic behind Donald Trump's tariffs? What is the weird Trumpian train of thought that's happening that makes him think that this is going to make the US better off? And how is there any grain of truth to that? Is it a gamble that could pay off for him?
Yeah, so the incentive behind the tariffs, from my understanding, was to revitalize American production, you know, domestic businesses. He used a lot of very creative adjectives to describe their demise over the few years, the recent years. And I suppose there is kind of a conversation to be had around the potential role for tariffs in assisting the development of domestic industries, mm-hmm. you know, from a very kind of mathematical academic standpoint. However, broad and blunt tariffs, such as the ones that Trump has decided to put in place, are just an example of incoherent trade policy. And this will likely stop America growing at the rate it would otherwise have done so. And with that, you will see higher prices for the US because, again, they pay for the tariffs. And with that, the Federal Reserve, which is their central bank, will probably, well, I won't say probably, as they have a dual mandate. But they could definitely react to these price rises by keeping interest rates higher for longer.
One of the, I guess, slightly humorous parts of this was particularly the fact that nowhere seemed to be immune from Trump's tariffs. So the Heard Island and McDonald Island, which are some of the most remote places on Earth, in fact, they're only inhabited by wildlife, and they are external territories of Australia, have themselves been hit with a 10% tariff. Norfolk Island, which lies just off Australia's east coast, also was slugged with a tariff of 29%. Does this give us an indication of sort of level of logic and detail that has gone into these plans? I mean, how sophisticated are these tariffs? And if the economics, you said they're broad and blunt, are, as you say, broad and blunt, what is the logic behind Trump's tariffs? Is this more, in your view, political than a proper kind of economic force?
I mean, there is something to be said for, and you know, I've heard it floated that this is really a negotiating tactic, yeah, for the US. And they're trying to leverage what they can to get people to come into their economy. And in doing so, it plays very well politically to kind of protect domestic industries. But the expansiveness and comprehensiveness of the tariffs, I wouldn't say are a reflection of any kind of degree of kind of incisive calculation. You know, I don't think the penguins in these remote islands will be particularly chuffed, but also they have no means of paying them. So, yeah.
And in terms of the countries who are going to be worst hit by these tariffs, can you just take us through some examples and what sort of pain they should be bracing themselves for?
Sure. I mean, we haven't crunched the numbers directly. But, you know, the global economy will suffer. And within that global economy are a lot of developing countries that rely on the business that comes from exports to the US, things like clothing and stuff like that. And these tariffs could really hurt. I mean, there are two standouts that come to mind because obviously the huge, huge table of tariffs. I couldn't possibly remember all of them. But, you know, Vietnam is subject to 46%, Thailand 36%. These are going to be economies that really do suffer from these kinds of tariffs, is my gut feeling. I mean, I haven't looked at the numbers.
And Fergus, do you think, just to round off, do you think that we should be bracing ourselves for a global recession?
Global recession, it would A, depend on how you define that, but B, I think broadly we can expect global growth to be a lot worse in the, at least the near future, and potentially have some very persistent effects. Whether or not you'd call that a global recession, I'd leave that up to the people with the definitions. But this will be pretty expansive in its impact, and it's a shame that it's happened.
All right, Fergus, thank you so much for joining us. That was Fergus Jimenez-England, the Associate Economist at the National Institute of Economic and Social Research. Coming up, why on earth are young people so enamoured by reform? Well, we'll be speaking to a local election candidate about this growing support. All that and more next.
It's Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald with Politics Uncensored. FUBAR Radio.
What the Health with Georges Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
I'm joined by Alex Mitten, retreat host and mentor.
I think a lot of people are lonely, surrounded by people at the minute. Like, you know, especially living in London, there's fucking people everywhere. But we sort of live these quite strange lives now where we're quite closed down emotionally, you know, even just like with our voice. We don't really speak that often sometimes, do you know what I mean?
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When is too early to say I love you? Soph said it the night we met.
Yeah. Right, let's just clear this up, right? When I said I love you, I remember I said it in the car.
In the cab, yeah.
In the cab, and I was like, oh my God, I love you.
Yeah, well, that was the day I made you my girlfriend, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I said, I love you, and you were like, I love you too. And I was like, I love you, 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 I love you so much, I love you so much, oh my God, I love you.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay. On paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I wanna find happiness and I need him to be kind.
Politics Uncensored on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Zoe Grunewald. Former Love Island contestant Ollie Williams has made the surprising move into politics after announcing he will be running for Reform UK in the local elections this May. Williams, who appeared back on the show in 2020, announced his campaign saying, "Our freedom of speech and society has been eroded for far too long and it's time to act." Williams is part of a growing movement of young people voting for reform, with the party being the third most popular choice for young men aged 18 to 24. But why are young men, especially young men, embracing reform? And does it have a problem with attracting young women? Well, joining us now is George Finch, who is a senior editor for The New Reformer and Reform UK candidate for Bedworth Central. George, thank you for joining us. Tell me, how did you first get into supporting reform?
Hello, thank you for having me on. And just to answer your first question, why I joined reform? So it was obvious to me, and it was obvious to a lot of young people across up and down the country, that the way the Conservatives and Labour have been dealing with the country, especially young people in schools, universities, for too long, they've been left, especially in universities. They're not allowed their freedom of speech anymore. They're allowed to have jokes in schools. And what I've found is that Reform UK is allowing young people to really find themselves in the world. You know, when I joined Reform UK, the chairman for Nuneaton at the time, Rob Howard, it was like a mini apprenticeship. And you find within politics, there's not many opportunities to grow and become a part of politics like many young people want to. There's no way of doing it. And what Rob Howard really helped me with was he gave me those opportunities of speaking to people, going and cutting ribbons during the election, leafleting, and it builds a community. And that's what reform's about, is family, community and country. And that's what has done it for a lot of young people, is they see the way the country's going. And they're like, this isn't what I want for the future, for my children when it comes to it, and so on. It's not what I want to create. I want to create something different, you know, especially in my area in Bedworth Central. What I found is that, you know, we used to have a hustle and bustle in town. We used to have over 60 pubs and restaurants. The town centre was amazing. We had a marketplace. Now we can't even buy shoes in Bedworth Central. How can we, as a town, be able to advance with the times, incorporate young people and the old, if we're not meeting those basic things? You know, the town centre has declined over the years. And what we need to do is we need to bring back that hustle and bustle, which is bringing back that marketplace back into the actual town centre. Then that will create that hustle and bustle, invite small businesses, maybe a chip shop and a local pub back into the town centre. Then that community spirit that we once had, that the older generation had when they were younger, that's what we can now have. You know, I think what's happened is that us younger people are looking at what the older generation had and thinking, wow, they can buy a house, they can afford a house, the rent's not sky high. You know, the statistics go that I'm going to have to be 30 living with my parents until I can buy a house. That doesn't seem fair to me. You know, it doesn't seem the right way for the country to be led. And I think what Labour have been doing in the last eight months has been absolutely disastrous for voters within my area, particularly cutting and threatening people with disabilities, freezing pension support, you know, all the things that Labour should be doing, they're not, and they're going the opposite way, and it's completely disgusting. And I think reform especially, we need a bit of different, bit of change, you know, someone that you can sit down. I'm knocking on doors. I've just come back from knocking on doors. Start at 11 in the morning, finish about 4 or 5 o'clock. And when I speak to the residents, it's such a shame to see that that community spirit's gone. And I can only see Reform bringing that back. The Conservatives were given a chance. Labour were given a chance. It's time to for Reform to be given a chance. And trust me, when we are giving that chance on May 1st, when we do win as many county council seats in Warwickshire, trust me, we're going to make that difference. We're going to have honesty, integrity and transparency before we even talk about what policies we're going to be presenting and pushing forward for the local people. We have to change our attitude. And that's what Reform's about. And that's why so many young people, like you said, young men are coming over to Reform. It's because they want that honesty, integrity out of politicians.
Sorry to interrupt you. It's really interesting what you're saying. It seems like one of the things you've identified is a real lack of communitarianism now in the UK. And I think that's really interesting because, for me, that is something that actually the Labour Party was really supposed to own. So if you look at the origins of Labour, the trade union movement, that was a kind of communitarian, those were kind of communitarian roots. And there has been some discussion within Labour about kind of reviving that communitarian spirit. And you look at some of the legislation that they put forward, for example, the Employment Rights Bill, where they want to strengthen unions. Does that not appeal to you? And why not?
No. Unions, I was speaking to a resident today about this, and she said she'll never vote Labour because when she was asked, she used to work as a secretary back in a factory, and they said, we're getting pay rises today. And she went, am I getting a pay rise? He went, no, you're not a part of the union. So you have to be part of a union to be able to actually have a pay rise. Yeah, that's what it was like back then. But now, how can we give Labour that chance to create that community environment when they banned public smoking in pubs? You know,
but surely that makes those places more accessible.
That destroyed so many pubs in Bedworth. No one understands. Bedworth had 60-odd pubs back in the day. Now we've got 5. That's that community. And you're right, look, Labour, that's how you used to have local councillors. You'd have a guy come back from the pit and go, I'm sick to death of this. And you go, why don't you do something about it? It's like, okay, I'll stand for councillor. You be my secretary, you be treasury. Let's do something. And that's how you do it. But it would be done in a pub. It would be done in a pub in a smoke-filled room. And that's what's changed, is that you're not getting that community spirit anymore because the social conversation it's not happening anymore because you're not getting young people in pubs mingling, learning from the older generation because Labour's shutting them all. For one second, the Tories have been doing the exact same thing from day dot, destroying that community spirit because together as a community we're stronger.
But do you?
That's why Reform is swiping through in these county council elections.
So, George, do you really believe that Reform is a party that is going to encourage community? I mean, some of its rhetoric so far has been quite divisive. It, you know, is voted against the Employment Rights Bill. The 5 MPs in there who have voted against, you know, the minimum wage, the fire and rehire policies in there. They're also standing on quite a low tax platform. They also have certain ideas about the NHS that seem akin to a French health insurance style system. None of these are ideas of a kind of a state that looks after its people. These seem to me to be more neoliberal ideas. Do you really think this is a party of community?
I think again, you're listing, you're not, and this is the thing, you'll read what our MPs vote on, but you won't read what it actually means to communities like mine. You know, if we look at increasing the tax threshold to £20,000. That takes so many people away from claiming benefits because they're thinking, I can actually earn more money working. I've had people actually...
But do communities like yours, George, not want more money for the NHS? I mean, they don't want a privatised NHS. They don't want a health insurance system, do they?
And this is where it's gone wrong. No one is claiming that we're going to privatise the entire NHS. Labour and Conservatives have been doing that since 1997. I will not. I've researched the Morecambe Bay baby deaths, mid Staffordshire, and these scandals are because of stealth privatisation from the NHS, from Labour, and from Conservatives for years. So if you're going to tell me that reform's going to start privatising, that is complete lies. What reform's saying is there has to be alternative methods for care. Your waiting list is massive. People can't go to the GPs. They don't want to wait 8 hours in a A&E, which they probably don't need to be.
But I don't understand how we're going to do this without collecting more money. And I think if reform is standing on a low tax platform, that is going to be at odds with a voter group that want more money for the NHS and more money for public services.
Labour have just are spending billions on foreign aid, right? How much did they want to spend?
Well, they've now cut their foreign aid budget.
They wanted to cut. 6 billion from the PIP, Department of Work and Pensions, to attack the most vulnerable and disabled, right? They wanted to save 6 billion. Do you know what reform would say? We can cut foreign aid by 50%, which gives you that 6 billion. We are looking at other methods. There's other ways of doing things. And what Labour's doing is so anti-Labour, it's destroying their campaign on the doors. You can look at policy, but when you're actually knocking at someone's door and there's an old lady saying, I've had enough, you know, 96-year-old, her name was Janet, actually. And she said to me, she went, I'm not voting. I said, why not? She went, I'm just waiting for till I'm in the ground with my husband, because what Labour, she was in two dressing gowns, a jumper and a coat, freezing. That is so the wrong way of going. Our most vulnerable that have paid this tax bracket for years, and what are they seeing out of it? The Conservatives in my area have increased the tax since 2021 by 38%, and there's still potholes. They still can't get appointments. Where's this money going?
I think
the two long councillors have been using this money and not realising that it's not theirs, it's the taxpayers.
Yeah.
We need the honesty and integrity back.
Okay, George, I just want to move on because we're running out of time, and I want to ask you particularly about the appeal of Reform UK and the use of social media, because Nigel Farage has got a big profile on TikTok, and that was something we saw him really use during the general election. Do you think Reform has been particularly adept at communicating with younger people via social media, or would you say it's more about the appeal of their policies? I mean, surely it's about their communication methods as well.
I think with reform and how they connect to the people, they do very well through social media. They do very well also with their policies and the way they communicate and the on social media. But like what we've been doing at the new reformer, it was obvious to us why we were doing what we're doing, spreading that grassroots message from people on the doorstep. People campaigning, learning their stories and how reform's growing as a community base, to then building up to then councillors, then to future MPs in 2029. And this is what the new reformer has been doing, is that we can get stories like people like Gareth Beer in Wales working hard, knocking on doors every single day during the general election, and take those stories and inspire others across the country that support reform to go, I'm going to put my hand up and do some leaflets. I'm going to knock on doors. I want to do some canvassing. And it's bringing that community together. And this is why the new reformer is doing so well, is because we've found that people want to hear from other reformers. You know, listen to a policy discussion, what some people are creating, you know, discussing whether things should change with university fees and things. That's what we've been doing. And reform also has been, you know, the pictures they get sent through onto their reform Twitter, showing people campaigning, canvassing across the country. It's really inspiring. And I received the Labour letter through the door. And how uninspiring that was to receive that, going, this is your Labour candidates. I thought, wow. You know, even if I wasn't reform, I wouldn't be voting for those anyway.
They're not...
George, there's no oomph there with them.
George, I just, sorry to cut you off. I just really want to get in this last question before we run out of time. Reform is still not as popular with young voters as the Lib Dems, Labour and the Greens. But do you see them getting more popular? And what's your prediction for Reform at the next general election, particularly with younger voters?
So to answer your first question, actually, during the general election, they did mock elections in secondary schools, and they found that Reform was coming comfortably second place, beating the Conservatives, beating Lib Dems. So Reform is doing amazing. Everything everyone's been doing in the last 8 months after the general election, or however long it's been, they've been working tirelessly around the clock. And
well, and what's your prediction for Reform at the general election? Sorry, we're just running out of time, so I want to make sure you get that in.
My prediction for the general election is I'm hoping that we get Nigel Farage as Prime Minister of this United Kingdom. And I think that we can do it with the way that we're doing it, with family, country and community. And with all that messages and our policy, I'm proud to be a part of Reform. And what I'm seeing is a movement that isn't just community-wide, but it's country-wide. And what we're doing at the moment, I'm very proud to call everyone in Reform UK a great team. And what we're doing is amazing.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That was George Finch, who is the senior editor for the New Reformer and Reform UK candidate for Bedworth Central. Well, that is it from Politics Uncensored today. Thank you for bearing with me while Ali is off this week. Please do join us next Thursday at 5 p.m. where we unwrap the week's political talking points. And you can, of course, stay up to date with the show by following at Politics Censored UK on social media. And you can find me at Zoe Grunewald. And if you've missed any of today's show, you can, of course, listen back and catch up on FUBARradio.com or via the FUBAR Radio app. Download it from your app store now. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you next week for another episode of Politics Uncensored.